I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Infrastructure Monday edition, 1 year to the midterm election edition. And I've been joined right now by a fine guest. He is Bill McCoshin. We welcome back the returning champion, Republican Bill McCoshin. Welcome back, Bill.
Hey, good to be with you, Crew. Thanks for having me.
Is it fair to characterize you as a lobbyist, Bill?
It is. It is. Yep, I'm a lobbyist or GOP strategist, whatever you want to call me. That's fine.
Bill, last time you were here, we established the fact that you were not going to be a gubernatorial candidate. But that's not because you've suddenly embraced the campaign of Tony Evers. Bill, let me ask you, let's start with the top of the gubernatorial ticket. Tony, you know, he's a year out and he doesn't have a ton of achievements, but he's got a couple of budgets he signed. They might be Republican budgets, but he's claimed them as his own. Bill, if you were advising the Evers campaign, what would you tell him to lead with?
I think you just hit on it, Crude. If I'm him, I'm running on the two tax cuts he signed into law. The fact that we've made some improvement on improving our roads, he ran on that. Remember, Tony's line was fix the damn roads, and I would argue that we've made some progress on that front. So those are two of the big things. And then I think probably his biggest argument for reelection is he's the goalie. Those are his words. Where if the Republicans want to go too far to the right, he can stop them. So. I think the Marquette poll that was released last week was danger signs for both him and Ron Johnson. But truthfully, Crude, I think there's a path for both of them to win. It's a narrow one for both of them, but I wouldn't rule either of them out. But clearly, they're swimming against a pretty strong current right now.
Well, Bill, Tony could win or Ron could win, but Ron and Tony are probably not both going to win. Do you agree with my assessment there?
I do agree with that. Yeah, it's possible that one could win and not the other. I don't see them both winning. It's pretty hard to imagine a Johnson/Evers voter, right? And we all know that there were some Baldwin Walker voters back in the day or Obama Walker voters. I just don't see a Johnson/Evers voter out there. I don't see it.
No, I would tend to agree with you, sir. So we've got Rebecca Clayfish. She is the most prominent Republican to enter the fray, if you will. And Bill, I thought I saw some press reports, or maybe it was just people on the street talking, Bill, but they said that you were out recruiting candidates to run in the Republican primary, maybe Eric Hovde, maybe John Mako. Bill, can you confirm or deny the rumors on the street?
I can wholeheartedly deny. I'm not recruiting anyone to run in the race. But what I can also tell you and your listeners, Mike, is that I have met with every credible Republican candidate for statewide office for the last 25 years. They seek me out. They ask for my opinion and my advice. And so I've met with anyone who's considering this race, but I'm not actively recruiting anyone. At this point in time, I think you're right. Rebecca Clayfish is the clear front runner. She's working extremely hard. I said last week someplace, I haven't seen a candidate work that hard since Tommy Thompson. So, I mean, she's doing what she can to try and crowd out any potential challengers. Whether she's successful in that, I think we'll know more by Christmas. I mean, if there isn't a legitimate contender against her by Christmas time, I think the sand in the hourglass will have run out and she will be the Republican nominee.
Bill McCoshin, let's talk about the guy who's running for something but hasn't made up his mind. He apparently is waiting on Ron Johnson's decision whether or not Ron will seek reelection. Let's start with Ron. Bill, do you agree with me that Ron is running for reelection?
I do. I don't think you work as hard as he's working or raise the amount of money he's raising. Maybe he's not raising as much as Lazary and Mandela, but he's pretty close. It's about $1 million a quarter. And I just think that Johnson's going to run for a third term. And I'll tell you what, he has caught two waves already, one in 2010, one in 2016. I think there's going to be another Republican wave in 2022. So, if you're going to run for re-election and you're a Republican in a statewide seat, 2022 is probably the right year to do it.
Okay. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That's Bill McCashin, a fine Republican and a reasonable human being, which is, you know, you talked about all the viable Republicans meeting with you, Bill, through the years. I'm thinking, well, that's not a lot of meetings. But anyways, Kevin Nicholson.
Oh, come on now.
If Rojo's in the Senate race, then Kevin, pardon me, sir. Kevin Nicholson has shown every indication he's running for something. He's going to jump in the gubernatorial race. Do you think that benefits Rebecca Clayfish, or do you think she tacks so far to the Trumpist right that any primary opponent that she perceives as viable could be harmful to her because she's going to tack so far right it's going to be hard for her to win the general?
Well, you bridge a couple questions here, and I'm glad you did that, because my position on primaries has been public since the day I got out, which is I support them. I think competitive primaries are crucial to winning, and history, Mike, is on my side. There have been four incumbent governors in the last 60 years in Wisconsin that have been defeated, all two Democrats and two Republicans. All four were defeated by someone who first won a competitive primary. There's no historical precedent for someone going, you know, unopposed in a with no primary and then beating a sitting incumbent. So it's that isn't a Bill McCashin's against Rebecca Clayfish statement. That's a statement of fact about the history of our elections here in Wisconsin. On the Republican side, the two guys that won competitive primaries were Lee Dreyfus in 1978. He beat Republican Party endorsed Bob Caston and went on to beat acting governor. We no longer have that term, Martin Schreiber, for a four-year term. And Dreyfus didn't run again in 82. Tony Earle, not Evers, won then. That same thing happened in 86. Tommy Thompson, my old boss, won a five-way primary before he challenged Tony Earle and went on to defeat him. So it's happened twice on the Democratic side as well. The most recent, obviously, is Tony Evers. He won a 10-way primary before he beat Scott Walker. And prior to that, Jim Doyle won probably the most competitive Democratic primary back in 06 when he beat Tom Barrett and Kathleen Falk. So the four times it's happened in our last 60 years here, Crude, all have started with competitive primary, whether it's on the Republican or the Democratic side. Now, to Nicholson specifically, I've gotten to know Kevin a little bit during this year when I was considering running myself. And I like him. I think he's a good guy. I think he offers a lot to the party. I think where he's making a mistake is this notion that you can be the available candidate. I don't think we're grassroots faithful, you know, view the governorship as sort of the consolation prize if you're not able to run for United States Senate, which is the office he wants to run for. I mean, frankly, my own personal view is the governor's the higher position because it's an executive position. Yeah. So I think he struggles with this available candidate notion, and that's going to be tough for him to overcome. He brings a lot to the table, and again, I like him. I'm not trying to diss on him, but the reality is you got to know what you're running for and why you want that position and what you want to do with it. And, you know, right now I think he's sort of rudderless when it comes to that.
Well, Bill, that reminds me of the race between Kevin Nicholson and Leah Voegtmer, or perhaps foreshadows the race between Nicholson and what I expect will be Rebecca Clayfish in the gubernatorial race. Now, Nicholson had his sugar daddy. He had Dick Uihlein throwing a lot of money behind his campaign, and Nicholson actually won 6 of 7 media markets, but in southeastern Wisconsin, where right-wing talk radio is king, they carried Leah Voegtmer in that media market. She only won the one, but she effectively won the state by double digits. First and foremost, do you see a similar sort of dynamic? Nicholson gets in the race. He can win outstate, but Rebecca Clayfish has the party faithful in her camp.
It's very similar. I mean, Nicholson won 56 out of 72 counties. Voegtmer only won 16. But they, as you pointed out, they were all primarily in southeast Wisconsin in the largest media market where most Republican voters are in a primary. So Kevin's worked very hard down in Southeast Wisconsin, but so has Rebecca. I would give her the advantage in Southeast Wisconsin at this point in time. I'm not sure that there's a talk radio host that's sort of locked in on one or either of them at this point in time,
but Bill, that'll come. Clayfish, that'll don't you come. Suspect? I mean, Kevin Nicholson's not going to wow Mark Belling and Dan O'Donnell and Vicky McKenna and suddenly sweep them off their feet at the expense of Walker's former lieutenant governor. I can't imagine, Bill.
I don't think so. It's going to come down to what they know, right? And they certainly know Clayfish. She's held elective office for 8 years as lieutenant governor, and she certainly has earned her chops, you know, going to all the chicken dinners from Superior, my hometown, to Kenosha, from Marinette to Platteville, and every spot in between. And Kevin's done a lot of that as well. So I think the only way that she loses in a primary, and I may be in a minority on this, is either it's going to take a massive self-funder or somebody with access to a lot of money, or a Donald Trump endorsement. I think that's the only thing that sort of resets that primary. Otherwise, it's Clayfish's to lose, for sure.
Bill, we talked or we mentioned right-wing talk radio. How important as a tool do you think that is to the Republican Party, especially in the Milwaukee media market? I've been telling my audience, between WISN and WTMJ, they were up to an 18 share. Well, I got to revise that, Bill. It's now over a 19 share that what I perceive these two right-wing media outlets cumulatively having in the Milwaukee market. Bill, that's an astounding number. How powerful is right-wing talk radio?
It's huge because you get free media out of it. What we call earned media in the business, right? You don't have to pay for it. They'll have you on and you get to talk about the issues that you care about. And ideally those issues are going to align with what the voters care about in that area, particularly Republican voters. So, you know, you get a bully pulpit, so to speak, in the largest media market in the state. And that's worth a ton. Yeah, I think Rebecca Clayfish would agree that she beat Brett Davis in the 2010 lieutenant governor primary, primarily because of Charlie Sykes. Charlie Sykes talked about her every day, had her on two or three times a week, especially at the end. And I think Charlie was the difference in that race. And much like the 2018 U.S. Senate race between Buchmeier and Nicholson, I mean, Brett won every place outside of Southeast Wisconsin, but he lost the race. So the Republican primary really does come down to what happens in the 10 to 12 counties in Southeast Wisconsin. And then you hope to grow from there.
Now, Bill, right-wing talk radio exists all across the state of Wisconsin. I saw what I thought was a startling number, 81 right-wing talk radio outlets. Only two of them are situated in Milwaukee, although they are two pretty big, powerful sticks. Bill, outstate, do these candidates go run into every small-town news talk radio outfit because they know they'll get a friendly ear and probably a fluffy interview?
They don't, but they should. I mean, Outstate used to have guys like Jerry Bader in Wausau, Green Bay. He's not around anymore. He got on the Never Trump train, and sort of that ended his show. And I feel bad. Jerry did a really good job. But we don't have as much of that outstate. It's primarily based here in Milwaukee and Madison. And those stations do carry in outstate markets now. So, Milwaukee Talk Radio has a bigger reach than a lot of listeners may understand.
Well,
and plus you got iHeartRadio, where you can literally listen to, you know, a variety of stations from Madison or Milwaukee from any place in the world.
No, I am quite aware, sir. He is Bill McCashin. He is a fine guest, a reasonable Republican. I count him amongst the handful I know. Bill, if you'll stick around for a few more minutes, I got a few more questions for you, sir.
You bet.
Appreciate it. Bill McCashin, a fine guest, a lobbyist, not a Republican gubernatorial candidate, but he's helping us get, you know, some insights from the right. You know, right-wing talk radio, they're massive. Bill knows it. I know it. Come back with us. Lefties, we're scrappy. We're Wisconsin scrappy over here. More Devils.
It's just me and Fancy here right now.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine guest live via phone. He is Bill McCashin, a Republican, a lobbyist, and I'd like to think a friend of ours. Bill, thanks for sticking around, man. I had a few more questions. I appreciate your insights. Want to talk about the
happy to be here.
Want to talk about the Democratic Senate race to take on Ron Johnson. And, you know, there's kind of the big three and then maybe one more. We got Mandela Barnes, and he got a big endorsement, James Clyburn today. We got Alex Lazary, who's running ads all over the state. At least I've been seeing them. And we got Sarah Godlewski, who, you know, at least we became aware recently through a Dan Bice article. She is of material wealth, let's just say, married well and has money and can self-fund to some degree. And then perhaps Tom Nelson, you know, sort of an outsider. I don't know if you saw the piece, Bill. Dave Cheslevic, I don't know if you'd always read the former Madison mayor, but he says, you know,
I do.
Maybe Nelson is something of a Feingold-like character, and he wonders if these three big dogs in this race, Mandela Barnes, Alex Lazary, and Sarah Godlewski, if they might, you know, turn the firing squad in each other and be somewhat self-destructive. Bill, you know, we're all speculating here, but do you have any tea leaves that you can read?
I think Mayor Dave is right. That's Thomas Nelson's only path to win the primary, in my opinion, is if the three biggies above him blow each other up. I think Mandela Barnes is the favorite in that race right now, but I think the sleeper really is Sarah Godlewski. I mean, being a female, you know, being able to self-fund potentially. The one in the big three that I struggle to find how he wins a primary is Alex Lazary. I mean, yeah, I know he's with the Bucks and he's got some important union endorsements, but I think it's a harder race for him because he doesn't have the connection to the statewide base that a Mandela does, or even Godlewski, who won a statewide race just a few years ago to be the state treasurer. So I think it's really a two-person race at the top between Godlewski and Barnes, with Barnes being the favorite. But the dark horse in the race, I agree with Mayor Dave on that, is absolutely Thomas Nelson. But he needs something to happen above him. He needs the big-time Democrats to blow each other up, and then he can sneak up the middle. And truthfully, of the four, he's the most progressive.
And Bill, do you think that effectively all the Democrats are going to show up in the midterm, so all of Madison and all of Milwaukee, they'll come out and vote for no matter who? Do you agree with Mayor Dave's assessment that Nelson, being sort of an outstater, has got sort of an ace up his sleeve, at least relative to his Democratic competition?
He may. The question really, Crude, is, you know, do Biden's numbers suppress Democrat votes? Do they stay home? They don't think they got what they bargained for in Joe Biden. And you see some of that in national polling right now. So the numbers on the Democratic side may not be as extraordinary, even though there's a 10-way primary for that U.S. Senate nomination in August 9th of next summer. So if people stay home, who does that impact the most, right? It impacts the guys in the bottom, the names we haven't named yet. So I still think it's going to be a very good year for Republicans in 2022, you know, at the national level and at the state level. I think they get a veto-proof majority in the state Senate, and, you know, they may add a seat or two in the state assembly, probably not a veto-proof majority. But then it's going to come down to those top-of-the-ticket races. Does Johnson run? And if he does, based on the numbers on the Marquette poll, can he run on his record, or does he have to run on defining the other guy, the other person, whether if it's Sarah Godlewski? Same for Evers. Can he run on his record, or does he have to define Clayfish, for example? You know, that remains to be seen. There's a path. Even though Johnson and Evers' numbers are not good, the job approval and the soft reelect, which is them versus a new person, is you know, minus 10 or minus 13. Those are horrible numbers. The alarm bells and the sirens should be going off. But I still see a path where, and you and I talked about this at the top of the show, is where Evers could rely on, hey, I said I would do these things, I did these things, and oh, by the way, I can stop really bad things from happening. That might be compelling in the suburbs. It might. His numbers on last week's Marquette poll are slightly better than Biden's all over the state. So he hasn't suffered as badly as Terry McAuliffe did, for example. But, you know, who knows if there's going to be a Biden drag 12 months from now. There may be.
Bill, we all looked at the Virginia race and the New Jersey race last Tuesday night. But let me ask you, closer to home, the Mequon-Thienesville recall, the bust of a recall, all the incumbents won re-election by wide margins. Now, that is quite a small sample, but my understanding, turnout was great, Bill. And
it was phenomenal.
I wonder, what's your take on that, you know, backyard race?
Yeah, I think you go back to 2012, the recall against Scott Walker, June 5th of 2012. He got 200,000 more votes than he got just 2 years earlier in 2010. So I think Wisconsinites reject recalls by and large unless somebody does something illegal or inappropriate in office. And I think Mequon-Thienesville is just a carry forward of the Walker recall in 2012. Voters just said no. We're going to let them fill out their term. We may not agree with everything they've done in office, but this is certainly not a reason to vote them out midterm. So I think Wisconsin voters, by and large, just reject recalls.
Bill, Ron Johnson recently said sentiment on the ground is very similar to 2009. You know, people crying to him. They're so hurt about the state of the country. Bill, do you see sort of a Tea Party movement afoot? Do you think there is this true sentiment on the right going on right now? I know that 92% of Republicans currently say they're going to vote in the midterms. If that's the case, it could be a red wave. What's your thought, Bill?
I think Johnson's right. You feel, when I was traveling around, I felt the same thing. People are angry. They want to get involved. They want to know how they can help. It's unusual for a midterm, how much energy there is on the ground. And I think you saw that in two pretty blue states in Virginia and New Jersey a week ago. I mean, some say Virginia is a purple state. That's not true. They haven't gone for a Republican in over 10 years now. And New Jersey ended up being within a point, and nobody ever even saw that coming. So the energy on the ground, the intensity, Crute, is on the Republican side, and I'm not sure Democrats can match it.
No, you might be right, Bill. Really appreciate your insights. Bill McCashin, he is a Republican. I guess you're a lobbyist for now, Bill. Perhaps pursue higher office in the future. And
A dad, a grandpa, you know, a small business owner, a lot of things. But I appreciate you having me on and talking to your listeners.
Well, Bill, a friend of mine is the most important title you could have, sir.
I'll take it.
Thank you, Bill McCashin. Thank you all for listening.
All right.
Devil's Advocates radio show. Earl Ingram's going to be next in Native Roots Radio. You're going to want to stick around. You're going to want to keep it locked. Devil Radio 92.7. You know, I thought I made it mostly through the Monday show without stumbling, bubbling, tripping over my big fat tongue. But there it was. I tripped. Have a great night.
I know it, baby. You know it, too.
This America.
They're winners. Winners get to do what they want.
I did what I came to do.